So I always knew I wanted to have kids and I couldn't wait for that experience. And when it's taken away from you and there's nothing you can do, you're in that situation and that experience is just not yours anymore. It's really sad.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the fourth episode of Secrets in the City, where we turn secrets of our past into life-changing lessons. All right, folks, about today's episode. That was very Canadian, about. Listen, I'm going to be honest here. No matter how hard I tried, it was literally impossible to summarize what you're just about to listen to. In the next hour, you are going to be touched, moved, and most certainly challenged in ways you're probably not really expecting. Now, if you can't hang around for today's episode, totally get it. Shoe shopping is a calling. But I would love to see you over on my Instagram page where you are going to get a summary of what we're going to be talking about today. And you can find me at Dr. _ Katherine. That's K-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E. Or for you to tune in next time for next month's episode. All right, guys. Today, you're going to hear from Dr. Clara Hurst, a person I can only summarize as a beautiful paradox. Now, we're going to speak about feelings of guilt and disappointment as a new mom.
I just haven't dealt with the trauma that I went through. I just put it to one side and I never addressed it because there's no time to do that when you have to be a mom.
We're also going to speak about how trauma can shift your perspective on life.
It's almost like it gave you a completely different perspective.
Totally. Yeah. I would have been freaking out if it was my first. But yeah. To me, it was like, oh, easy done. So I think he was in hospital for a month, maybe just over a month, whereas she was in 6 months. And also the problems that we were going through with him were not the same.
And finally, we're going to touch on something that I know you're all going to relate to, answering the question, do we actually need to love our own family?
I grew up with parents who measured my worth by my achievement. It was that constant criticism. So you would always try and achieve more and more and more and more. And it was just never enough. You were always made to feel like it wasn't enough.
A little about Clara. Now, Dr. Clara founded one of Perth's top aesthetic clinics, Blanc, where she's renowned for her signature untouched non-surgical injectable treatments. Now, Dr. Clara also founded The Secret, a skincare line where each and every jar, and I'm going to repeat that, where each and every jar is handmade to suit the client's specific requirements, using the highest quality active ingredients for clinically proven and visible results. Dr. Clara graduated as a dentist from King's College London Medical and Dental School in 2005 and then did further study in the field of facial rejuvenation and cosmetic enhancement. She worked as a cosmetic injector internationally and is also an educator for Derma Medical Australia, where she trains doctors, dentists, and nurses in the latest non-surgical cosmetic enhancement techniques. Now, as you'll hear today's episode, and inevitably, I know what you're going to do. You're going to search her Instagram, which, by the way, is Dr. Clara Hurst. That's DrClaraHurst. You will find out that she's yet another guest that I'd describe as a walking paradox. You know, when you look at her, Dr. Clara is the perfect it girl. She's tall, blonde, and beautiful. She's European, has an accent, oh my God, to die for. Her legs goes on for days. They're absolutely to kill for. And a perfectly curated Instagram grid. All this, and she's got some seriously smart brains too. Mamma mia. But beyond all that fabulousness, there is significant pain, hurt, and in my eyes, even anger. It's the kind of story that will remind you of something seemingly so obvious. Everyone has a heart, but all hearts can be broken. Clara is walking around with an incredibly eye-opening, heart-wrenching, but life-changing story. Seriously, folks, I'm letting you know now that you are going to need a big-ass box of tissues for this episode. And on that note, before we get into today's podcast, I need to insert a little content warning. This episode, of course, has a few swear words. I mean, come on, what do you expect when you're tuning into my podcast? But more importantly, there are also some pretty emotional themes surrounding premature childbirth. So if today's episode brings up anything for you and you need to talk to someone, please contact your local helpline. Now, if you're in Australia, Lifeline is available at 13 11 14. Now, I know that sounds a bit dark and heavy, but I promise you by the end of this episode, you are going to learn and be sparked and almost be reset into looking at the world in a different way. So without further ado, let's dive in.
So, Dr. Clara, Dr. C.
Clara's fine.
Clara, what secret did you pick out of the thousands?
So I picked a secret that says, I blame myself for the struggles my daughter is enduring. If I could, I would suffer again and let it not be her.
Why'd you pick that one?
So the background to this is I've got an 8-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son, and both were born prematurely.
Tissues are coming out. Take your time.
Oh, that's early on.
I have a knack for making people cry for some reason.
Well, you resonate. So my daughter was born at 24 weeks.
Wow, so very premature.
She has ongoing health and developmental issues, which are not obvious to the average person.
Yeah.
But they're very much there. And I feel really lucky that she's here and she's healthy. But I do also feel guilty for the issues that she has.
What's inherent to that guilt, if we can unpack that guilt?
I just haven't dealt with the trauma that I went through. I just put it to one side and I never addressed it because there's no time to do that when you have to be a mum.
Can I ask you, is there no time, or do you put other people in front of yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
That one. But I feel guilty because, you know, as a mum, you're supposed to protect your child, and I did everything right during my pregnancy. I was healthy, and I feel like, especially at the time, I felt like, why couldn't I keep my baby in?
So it was something out of your control. And would you say that in general, you like being in control?
I like being in control, yeah. And when something's taken out of your control and you can't do anything, it's really frustrating. It's really unfair. I felt that it was so unfair. I could see there's so many mums out there, even in the hospital, who were smoking and drinking and living really unhealthy lifestyles, and yet they kept their babies in until full term and gave birth to healthy babies. And when my daughter was born, she only weighed 1.4 pounds, which is 540 grams. She was born into a little plastic bag and then whisked away, was born, you know, no pulse, not breathing. She had to be resuscitated at birth and, you know, taken away straight away. And I feel guilty. I didn't want to meet her because I didn't want to be attached.
You didn't want to be attached to her? Just in case?
Yeah, because they told me she probably wouldn't make it. So I didn't want to name her and I didn't want to
form that bond.
Yeah.
Do you relive that experience?
Yeah.
Over and over?
Yeah.
Would you say sometimes you want to go back and change?
Yeah. But there's nothing I could change in terms of her being born early. You know, of course, you know, I was there. She was in hospital for 6 months and she suffered so much. She had so many procedures and operations, and it's hard to see your baby going through that. And there's nothing you can do, and there's no way that you can help. And even now, you know, sometimes I lose my temper with her because she just developmentally behind. Mm-hmm. But it's not obvious, you know. She's just a bit more immature. But it's sometimes I get frustrated, and then I think back, and I feel like it's so unfair for me to feel like that towards her, because it's not her fault. But as a parent, it's frustrating when you're like, you know, why can't you just do this or do that?
Yeah.
But yeah, I live with that, disappointment and guilt all the time. And for a long time, I couldn't watch any shows about women giving birth and new moms and things like that. I just couldn't, because I would just cry, and I couldn't even bear anyone asking me how she was for maybe 4 years, because it just made me cry, even on the inside. Even if on the outside I was responding with the right answers.
Yeah,
I did find it really upsetting.
Can you tell me more about this feeling of disappointment? Because I think from the outside, we, even though I'm not a mom, I can somewhat understand the guilt, even though it doesn't make sense, I can understand it. But disappointment, if we can unpack that a bit.
I felt like I'd been robbed of my birthing experience, and I felt like I'd missed out. And it only happens once in your life, and I missed out, and I missed it. And I didn't have a nice birthing experience. I didn't have, you know, my mum's got 4 kids, and she said the best moment of her life is when you give birth and they bring your baby, and you give your baby a cuddle, and it's really nice, and then your family come and visit, and so on. And I didn't have any of that.
That got robbed from you.
Yeah, and I felt like it was really unfair having a baby shower and bringing your baby out to meet people, and no one met my baby, not no one, because no one was allowed in the hospital for so yeah. Until she came home after 6 months, no one met my baby. Then when she came home, she was on oxygen full time, so she had tubes, so I had to feed the baby with the tubes. The baby sleeps with the tubes. You're attached to a giant oxygen tank 24/7.
Right.
You can't even really go for a drive unless you plug it into the rucksack with the oxygen,
right.
And you can only go for a little while, and it's just not the experience. I feel really lucky. Don't get me wrong, I don't feel unlucky. The opposite, I feel really, really lucky that she made it. But I did feel just that unfairness that I wanted to have that beautiful first mom experience. I wanted to have a baby since I was like 12.
Oh wow!
So I always knew I wanted to have kids, and I couldn't wait for that experience. And when it's taken away from you and there's nothing you can do, you're in that situation, and that experience is just not yours anymore. Mm. It's really sad. And when she was in hospital, I read this poem that somebody wrote, and it was a mum who had a premature baby, and I'll send it to you afterwards, but it just talks about how, and it represented exactly how I was feeling. So she talks about how having a premature baby is a little bit like preparing a holiday, and you're going to go to Paris, and you're so excited, and you're going to see the Eiffel Tower, and you're going to go the Arc de Triomphe, and you plan ahead what you're going to do, what sights you're going to see, what you're going to do when you're there, what food you're going to have. And it's really exciting. And then you get on the plane and they're like, oh, this plane isn't going to Paris. This plane is going to Amsterdam. And now you have to adapt. That is not your dream, and that's not what you planned. And that you have to learn to love the experience that you've been given. You have to suddenly see the beauty in the windmills, because that's what you got. And it's the same, right? So that your child's development is a different path to everybody else's. Mm-hmm. And the things that you're doing, like I would be going to physio with my daughter, you know, and my friends would be going to the park with their kids. So, and you're not going to get that experience back.
As I'm sitting here listening to that story, one of the feelings that's coming up for me is anger. I guess I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and the one thing that comes up for me is being angry. Like, why me? Why me?
Yeah. That's exactly how I felt. Why me? I didn't do anything wrong. I was, you know, I did everything by the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a lot of things a lot better than other parents who go on to have very healthy babies. So yeah, I did feel really angry and scared, because I didn't know what the future would hold for my daughter. So they gave me, before she was born, they basically prepare you for your baby's not going to make it, right? So you need to be prepared so that you get counseling before you go into labor.
Oh wow.
Because the chances are your baby's not going to live. So they gave me 10% chance of her surviving.
Wow.
And then if she survives, then it's 90% chance of handicap, generally cerebral palsy. And then once she was born and she didn't die, and You know, we didn't know she had cerebral palsy because you don't really find out till much later. She was ventilated. She was on life support for so long and she couldn't get off. She just couldn't make it. So eventually they offered me, they tried every, you know, different types of ventilators and different oscillators and so on. And they tried different ways of getting her off the being ventilated and they couldn't do it. So they said the last resort is we can give you child steroids, but steroids in a baby can prevent the brain from growing. So it can stunt the growth of the brain and usually can cause cerebral palsy. So they said you have to choose. Either your baby stays on the life support and may never get off and we may have to turn it off, or we try the steroids, but then you're increasing your risk of cerebral palsy even more than you already have.
Oh, my God.
And you have like 24 hours to make your decision and they can't choose for you.
Oh.
So that's like we had to make a lot of those decisions throughout this time and you're already under so much stress. It's really hard.
Yeah.
So we obviously being in the medical field, we did a lot of research and we decided that, you know, I said to my husband, I would rather push my child in a wheelchair than not have a child. And so we decided, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And so we did. And it obviously turned out really well, but you don't know because, like I said, cerebral palsy, there's a big spectrum.
Yep.
And if it's severe, you do notice it when they're a bit younger, but sometimes some aspects you don't know until they're a little bit older. Mm-hmm. But luckily, she doesn't have that.
So when you're talking about we, one thing that I'd like to ask is how did this process affect you, your relationship with your husband?
It was pretty hard.
Yeah.
But we both have our kids' interests, you know, before anything else. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was really hard at first. And during the time in the hospital, we did have, you know, a lot going on and they do provide you with counselors because this anger can come out in different ways. Yeah. At the time there was really tough times between us. But in the end we sort of pulled through together. Mm-hmm. You know, you come out stronger at the end.
Yep.
But yeah, it's hard.
It would be. I think there's an analogy. I think it's the car manufacturer Volkswagen where they, at the end of the process, they will take randomly one of the cars off the production line and shake it really, really hard to see what comes loose. And that's kind of like the analogy of being parents when you have a kid. When you have a kid, you're shaken, traumatized, tornado, and things come loose. And this process was exponentially more like an earthquake.
Yeah.
With a hurricane and a tornado all mixed in one. So you guys really got shaken.
Yeah. And it would annoy me when parents would complain about their babies. Or their little kids. And I would think, you have no idea how easy you've got it and you're complaining about nothing. Mm-hmm. And I wish those were my problems.
I wish I could have had such a simple problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I just don't know if you ever get past that pain.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever will. Because when I think about it, I cry still.
Yeah. And when you cry, do you see that as a weakness?
No.
Okay.
I don't see it as a weakness.
It just still affects me. What frustrates you about the fact that you still get emotionally affected by it? The reason I ask this is because I'm just going to put it out there. Your for example, your Instagram feed is beautiful. You're stunning. I mean, you are stereotypically that gorgeous. Everything is gorgeous.
Thank you.
And yet I've never seen so much beauty as when a woman cries and is vulnerable. And so I guess what I'm saying is it's a bit of a contrast, but I think it's so beautiful.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not that I feel ashamed to cry or I feel embarrassed to cry. It's that I still have so much pain. Mm-hmm. That's more what I'm talking about. I don't know when that pain will go away.
Yeah. Pain and discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever gone into Have you ever received any counselling or?
At the time, yeah, I did, because I also threw myself so much into this baby. You have to be there all the time. You have to pump. You have to express every 2 hours through the day and the night without a baby there. And it's hard. You have to set your alarm every 2 hours to express. And I was expressing so much milk. I had like a freezer full at the hospital, so they asked me to keep it at home. Then my freezer got full at home. It was triple stacked in every shelf. So then I kept it at my mother-in-law's. I just had so much milk, but I was putting myself under so much pressure that eventually the consultant took me to one side and said, please stop. Wow. Stop, because you're killing yourself doing this and your baby's fine. You have 6 months worth of stored milk. And
dairy farm in your freezer. Do you ever want to give up?
You can't give up. You can't. There's no way you there's nothing you can give up, you know, like there's nothing you can do. You've got to just be there for your baby. And we were really lucky. We had a really good hospital and a really good team looking after her. And we were really lucky that the hospital we were at admitted 24 week old babies, because most are just from 28. And you can abort up until 24 weeks, right? So it's the smallest. Anything younger than that, they don't generally resuscitate the baby, because they're and there's a reason, okay? Because the babies are not viable. So rather than putting your baby through a lifetime of pain, I understand why they do that. But we were really, really lucky where we were.
Wow.
Yeah.
The reason why I ask about, do you ever want to give up, is many, many of the secrets that I've collected over the years are by mums who say, sometimes I just want to get in the car and drive away.
Yeah. And Look, at the time, I'm sure I did. At the time, I'm sure there were times that I just wanted to stay in bed and not get out. Mm-hmm. For sure. I cried a lot. I cried every day. I cried for several hours every single day, because I felt, why me? Why me? This is so unfair. Why my baby? It's not just even why me, but why my baby? Mm. You know, why this pain that this baby's going through is just not fair.
It isn't. And you have a son.
I have a son.
How was that experience?
He was also premature.
Oh, gosh.
So my daughter was born in the UK, but my son was born over here, and I had a really great team. It took me 4.5 years to get the idea. Round to the idea of having another one, because I was so scared. So eventually I did, and I had a consultant here who specializes in exactly my situation and preterm birth. And so when I was 3 months pregnant, they took me into theater and stitched my cervix closed. I also had hyperemesis both pregnancies, so I was extremely sick. I had to take steroids. So I got like really big, really quickly, put on 15 kilos in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because of the steroids. So it's uncomfortable. You're retching all the time. It's not nice. But but I felt really well cared for. So I would go every week to the scans. I couldn't drive for a lot of it because I was so sick. And I would turn up at the obstetrician's office and I was like on the floor retching. I couldn't get up off the floor.
God. Sounds so like torture.
They're tough pregnancies. I don't know why, because I always wanted to be pregnant. It was just like a thing I just always look forward to, and then my body just doesn't like it. So then I managed to hold that pregnancy with the stitch of my cervix until I was about 30 weeks. And then my waters broke, so then I had to go back into theatre to take the stitches out.
Oh.
Yeah, so I had 2 general anaesthetics while I was pregnant. And then they kept me in the hospital. I got a bad infection, couldn't move my head. And so then they had to induce me because my waters had broken. So I'd obviously got then an infection. And and ended up giving birth at 32 weeks. So that was still obviously 7 months, still early. But I felt more confident because I'd been through it. Yeah. And I knew at that point as well, like there's a big, big difference, right, between 5 months and 7 months.
Yeah.
A massive difference. Every week counts. And certainly that's enough time. 32 weeks is, I mean, you wouldn't say it's almost full term, but to me it is. To me, it was like a huge baby, 2 kilo baby, which I was massive, 4 pounds. So
it's almost like it gave you a completely different perspective.
Totally. Yeah. I would have been freaking out if it was my first. But to me, it was like, oh, easy done. So I think he was in hospital for a month, maybe just over a month. Whereas she was in 6 months. And also the problems that we were going through with him were not the same.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, partially what this process is all about is how can we, I guess, inform each other and talk to each other about our own personal stories. Because, for example, from my perspective, because again, I'm not a mom, this is all new to me, and it's about informing yourself before you make that gaffe, before you open your mouth and say something that perhaps, for me, it's about education.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think specifically when it comes to our own secretive stories, and when I say secrets, that's probably a bit of a misnomer, but our own personal experiences can help others in so many ways, not necessarily about helping them with, as Brené calls them, fucking first times, FFTs, but, you know, like your FFT was that first one and the second one was easier, but how can we help others that they can get through those fucking first times a bit easier.
Yep.
And I think there's going to be so many women that are listening to this saying, wow, I didn't realize how good I have it. Mm. And they're going to be hugging the shit out of their kids, right?
I hope so, yeah. And I also would like to think that if there are any women who are in the situation that I was in, I wouldn't mind them reaching out to me for help or advice, or even, you know, to listen to. I'm happy to listen to anybody, because I didn't have somebody. I didn't have anybody. And I long for that so hard. Mm. I would go on forums for Bliss Charity and places like that, where there's online chats about people who have brain babies, and they're asking advice, you know, small things, even tiny things like there are no clothes. How do I dress my baby? Like, there are no prem baby clothes, and they have to have Velcro and things like that for all the tubes. So where do I buy that? And there was at the time only one place you could buy, and they did two things and that's it. Whereas now there's a lot more. But for me, it was, I wanted reassurance that my baby was going to be okay. And I was looking for that everywhere. I would ask the hospital doctors and the nurses every day, and they can't tell you. They can't tell you, because if they say your baby's going to be fine and your baby is not fine,
yeah,
that's not going to end well. Yeah. So as a policy, they do not tell you, yes, your baby's doing great, or no, your baby's not doing great. They just say nothing.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating at the time, because I just wanted one person to hear, your baby will live, your baby will be okay. And nobody would tell me. So I would go on these forums and search high and low. And most of the women on there had babies that were born much older. Yeah. So the problems were smaller. There was hardly any at 24 weeks, mainly because they're probably not online. They were probably in the hospital with their babies. And I wish I'd had someone to talk to, and especially as well when she came home and she was on oxygen. That was really scary, yeah. Because I remember driving, I was on the motorway, and she pulled, as babies do, you know, they move around, and she pulled her cables, her wires off, you know, the tubes. And she could not be without oxygen even for like 2 minutes. So I had to pull over in the motorway and put them back in. Things like that. At night time, she would be alarmed, so she had alarms on both feet. Yeah. And then three pairs of socks and tapes and things. But even when they move their foot, the alarm disconnects, and so the alarm goes off in the night, and it's not because they're not breathing, it's because they're disconnected, but you don't know, and it goes off every night for one reason or another. So you go in, either they've turned their head and the tubes come off, or it's just stressful and you can't rest, and
yeah.
It's a different experience, and my friends would be having this lovely experience and going for coffee with the other mums, and I didn't even get to do the mums, you know, the prenatal class, antenatal classes or anything like that, because I had the baby before those antenatal classes began.
Oh God.
And I was signed up to them, but you know, they happen when you're, I think, like 7 or 8 months, and I gave birth at 5 months, so there's no point in me going. And I wish I had someone to talk to and to who'd been through it and who'd say to me, you know, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. So if there is anybody listening who is currently going through that situation and they want a little bit of just listening, someone, you know, listening ear or a bit of reassurance or to hear what I did in this situation that helped me, what helped me at the time, then you know, I'm happy to help anyone.
It's sometimes you just want to know that you're not the only one that's going yes. through it. Because I believe that sometimes when you do think that way, you think that there's something wrong with you. inherently wrong with you. And again, to point out Brené Brown, she's slightly my girl crush. I would switch teams for her, really. Like, amazing researcher. But she says essentially this whole thing about shame is that there's something inherently wrong with you. And because of that, you're not worthy of love. And I think, you know, we're getting all esoteric here and so forth, but at the core of it, I think we all just want to be loved. Mm-hmm. And I think this thing about putting your hand up and saying, I've gone through this, anyone else here feel the same way, let's chat. It's almost like a miracle pill in my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I went through years, and I'm just to preface this saying, this is not a comparison, just what I went through with severe eating disorders, everything from anorexia to bulimia to everything in between, suicidal ideation. And I just thought, well, I'm the only one who's going through this. I must be crazy.
Yeah.
There must be something wrong with me. And God, this is well before, you know, people started putting up their hand and saying, this is what I'm going through. And it was horrendous.
Yeah.
Horrendous.
Yeah.
Because you think that there's something wrong with you.
It's lonely.
It's very lonely. And it, you know, you're in your own echo chamber.
Right.
You're only listening to your own thoughts. And I always say, you know, when you're in that kind of mindset, you're probably not your own best friend.
Mm.
So that's where, you know, reaching out.
Yeah.
So speaking of reaching out, I would love to know now if we can dive into your own personal secret. And when I say secret, it could just be something that maybe you've never exposed before. Or I should actually first ask, how do you talk about your experience with your premature babies a lot? Or
do I talk about it with them?
With just people. Is this the first time you've spoken about it publicly, if you will? Or...
Yeah, I guess it is. I do. I talk to people. People ask me sometimes, you know, about my kids, or when you have something in common and you and everyone's reaction is the same. Wow. Oh, my gosh. It's giving me goosebumps. Like I didn't know that. And I like to talk about it. But it is hard because you don't want to also burden someone with talking about it to them, because they might not have an interest in listening to you. But I do like it when people show an interest, because it shows that they care. Right. But yeah, it's not something you just bring up with people all the time.
Definitely not. I mean, I think trust, a person needs to deserve some kind of trust. And trust is kind of like laying bricks. You know, I have to show a bit, you have to show a bit. And that's how the bricks are laid when it comes to trust. You know, it's not like you walk up to a stranger in the street like, yo, guess what happened to me?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a bit awkward.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of moving on to the part of my secret to reveal, it's not so much a secret as such. It's more about my relationship with my mum. My own mum is not good. I feel, you know, my mum is extremely critical. And even linking back to my issue, you know, with my daughter being so premature and how other people don't understand, small comments that don't help. Things like, why are you feeding your child such and such, say, okay, as an example. My daughter wouldn't eat a thing. She still hardly eats anything. But when she was a baby, because she has so many tubes and masks, she didn't like anything near her face. So she would not have anything with texture, with any flavor. She still eats pretty basic food, but it was a struggle for a long time. She would go to occupational therapy. She would go to physio. She'd go to all these experts. And they would give me advice on, this is the only thing you can give your child, because she would drink the milk and then she would vomit everything back up. Then when she went to solid, she would refuse to eat anything. So she would only eat pureed food. So even at age, I don't know, I can't remember now, but maybe 2 or 3, she would only eat pureed food, right? So these little Ella's food pouches. And even when I made my own pureed food, she wouldn't eat that. And what do I do? Do I let my child starve, or do I give my child the food that she will eat? And my mum would criticize that constantly. And I'm like, you don't understand, because you don't have a child who has had all these problems. You don't get it. And a lot of people don't get it. And they might see you're feeding your kid this or that. It was never anything unhealthy. But certainly I would make an effort to cook a lot of food, and my child would eat none of it.
Yeah. So a lot of judgment?
A lot of judgment.
Okay.
Of what I would and wouldn't do. And, you know, everyone's just trying their best.
And would you say you're already, it sounds to me that you're already judging yourself.
Yeah.
So do you really want anyone else to judge you?
Correct.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And now that I have a child who doesn't have all those problems, it's like, oh my God, how is this kid so easy? Yeah. Because my son is, you know, what you would say, normal, you know, yeah. not... They're both normal, but he's your regular kid with regular developmental development. He's not delayed, and he doesn't have sensory issues. My daughter has some significant sensory issues. Mm. He doesn't have that, and it's just a breeze. So I put the food and he eats it. What a joy. And then I think this is what other parents go through. Your child, you do this and your child does that. You it's just the normal, what you would expect. And I didn't have any of that with my daughter. And it's just adapting to this new path that you didn't, and it's harder. And she's not a hard child, but it's a hard, it's a different path than this.
Yeah, so you don't want a mum making it even harder.
Don't want mum making it even harder. Yeah, but my mum is has got extremely high expectations.
Did that start when you were young?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I don't have much of a relationship with my mother now. She's just highly critical. Nothing will be ever good enough, and you can try your best, but it's never going to be good enough ever. You know, that constant criticism makes you into a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. But the truth is you can't be perfect all the time, and the pressure to be perfect all the time is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that a lot. I am under a lot of scrutiny all the time, and it's really hard to maintain that.
Who's scrutinizing you? Is it you?
No, it's not me. Well, I suppose it is me in some ways.
Yeah.
Just society, I guess. You know, it's everyone. And when you have a public profile, then it becomes even more so. You know, I'm very lucky that I've overcome a lot of my childhood issues of feeling that no matter what, you would never be enough and you would never do enough and you would never achieve enough. Doesn't matter that I got a first class honours degree. Doesn't matter that I've got an amazing career. Doesn't matter. It's never going to be enough for some people, right? So that's their problem. So in time, as I've gotten older, when I was a child, that used to really affect me. Even in my 20s, that used to really affect me. And I went through a period of time in my 20s when I had severe depression and anxiety where I couldn't get out of bed. Because I was that depressed. I couldn't function because the anxiety was crippling. Mm. But I've overcome that completely. And I've actually come out the other end feeling like a weight off my shoulders. And I feel like this is my true self. And I feel really good. And I feel really good every day I wake up. I feel like myself. I feel there's no cloud. I'm very accepting of myself. I feel like I am enough. I've worked on that sort of in the background by myself over the years. And I feel like that's what I want to help. I suppose I want to help other people feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really passionate about that. I'm really passionate about making other women feel like they are enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you feel like that, there are, you know, you just don't have any barriers. There's nothing you can't do, right? Because you are deserving of everything. And I do talk to my patients when they come in, interestingly, and they come and make kind of derogatory comments about themselves.
Yeah.
And I do try and educate them that they are just, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a treatment here and there or improving the way you look because it makes you feel better about yourself or more comfortable. That's one thing. But I want them to feel that they are themselves. They are enough, you know. And I think it's really important.
I think there's a big difference, as I always say, when it comes to appearance, because I used to be very interested in body image and so forth. And oftentimes people wouldn't understand that body image isn't about your looks. It's a way you think about your looks. Yeah. So it's an image, just like a photograph is a representation of someone. It's not an accurate depiction of them. So it's changing your thoughts, not changing your looks. However, I think there's a big difference in taking pride in your appearance versus obsessing over
Correct.
It.
Yeah.
And it's the difference between the two that I think from the outside can be a bit confusing because, heck, I like a little lift and a little this and a little makeup and a little, right, yeah. now and again. Yeah. And it makes me feel great. Yeah. but I don't depend on it.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, the difference. And it sounds to me that you're at that stage too, where in the past, perhaps you might have depended on your looks for your confidence and your self-worth and the A pluses and the achieving this.
And for me, it wasn't really about the looks. I never felt self-confident, self-conscious about my looks. Mm-hmm. It was about the achievements. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So like that your worth is measured by your achievements. Mm-hmm. I grew up with parents who measured my worth by my achievement. It was that constant criticism. So you would always try and achieve more and more and more and more. And it was just never enough. Mm-hmm. You were always made to feel like it wasn't enough. And that's really damaging. Yeah. But the actual confidence from appearance, it's weird because I work in that. That's my field. But just because I have an interest, and I have an interest in aesthetics and beauty or art or whatever you want to call it. I do have an interest in that, but it wasn't with myself. I like to look nice, don't get me wrong, but I don't sort of obsess yeah. over it or find that my worth is linked in any way to the way I look. It isn't. I don't feel it is, and I don't feel like the people around me make me feel like it is either. My husband certainly doesn't. My friends don't. So my siblings don't either. I have a really good relationship with them. It's not that. It was more growing up with the pressure of being perfect in other ways. Mm-hmm. Not so much in the way you look, although obviously, like I said, you know, being in having some sort of public profile, it is hard to always put something out there that's going to be not criticized. Because I am aware of... not so much with myself, but I've seen other women who are constantly picking at different people in the media unfairly. It's not nice to be a target of that.
Why do you think these women and also men do that? Why do you think people criticize each other?
Oh, look, they've got their own insecurities, and that's what it is. People who do that are just kind of reflecting their own insecurities. I have no doubt about that.
And what about your parents? Why do you think they are the way they are?
It's a hard one. They're very complex people. Look, luckily for me, I know it's not me. My parents have four children and they have the same relationship with all four, whereas we actually get along between ourselves. And we've grown up realizing at the time you feel like it's just you. Yeah. And at the time you feel like there's something wrong with you, right? That you can't be worthy of love because... you get criticized so much and you get crushed so much that you feel like, why am I not good enough? Yeah. And I will, but then one day you realize I'm never going to be good enough for this person. That's not my problem. That's their problem. I'm an awesome person. And I do feel that. I feel like I am an awesome person. I'm a nice person. I don't deserve to be spoken to like that or treated like that or comments that they make towards me. I don't deserve that. I haven't done anything to deserve that. Yeah. Right. So I now realize that it's not my problem. It's their problem. They must have their own issues going on that, you know, from their upbringing that's made them that way. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, they won't get help. They won't get therapy. They think that they're just perfect the way they are. and that's a problem. And they can see that it's destructive to the relationship with their children. Mm-hmm. And yet they won't do anything because they're too stubborn. But just it's a different generation, I suppose.
It is.
But time's ticking, right? And they get into the end of their lives and they're too stubborn to turn things around for themselves. Mm. And that's really sad. And that bothers me every day.
Mm. I remember reading this quote, something along the lines of, sometimes we need to go to therapy for the people in our life that won't go to therapy.
I think that all the time.
Yeah.
And that is exactly correct. And we've all identified that, myself and my siblings. But I have had a lot of therapy for the fact that my parents won't go to therapy.
Yeah. It's bullshit.
It's bullshit.
It's absolute bullshit. And sometimes, you know, the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And it's very frustrating when you see friends, family members and so forth, when it's like, it's just so simple. Can you not just see the other side of the coin?
Yes.
Can you not also accept some of the blame? Can you not put your hand up and say, you know what, actually, that was my bad.
Yes.
I'm going to take responsibility for it.
Exactly. Yes. And but look, I agree with that completely. But then the other thing is, I've now realized that as I've gotten older, people are the way people are. You can't change the way people are. That's how they are, and so be it. They're not a terrible person necessarily. They just have different opinions to me and a different way of being to me. So that's how they are. That's okay. You can be the way you want to be. I'm not going to let it affect me, and I'm going to be the way I want to be, and I hope it doesn't affect you.
Yeah.
And that's it. And we both carry on in our, on our paths. Mm. And, as you know, you just don't wish for it to be damaging to anybody else. So I just keep them at arm's length. I talk to them when I have to talk to them, because every time I open those doors, the criticism and the negativity comes back in. And it starts small, and then they start picking at things and things that are hurtful, that I don't need. So
sometimes it kind of makes me think, do we have to love our family? You know, it's kind of politically correct to, but, you know, if you had a friend that was being a dickhead to you, would you continue being their friend?
No, I'd cut them out.
No. So why is it? And I think things are changing as, you know, time goes by, that people are, I don't know.
It's true. But at the same time, I feel like I do have a lot of love for my parents, and I have a lot of respect for my parents. My parents sacrificed a lot growing up, when we were growing up, to give us a life that was the best they could. Okay. With what they have been given, with the emotional maturity that they are able to have. Okay. So they paid for us to go and study overseas, which cost them a lot of money. So to do that, they had to, because I went to the UK when I was 14. So I went there to live by myself with a host family. I left home. I haven't lived with my parents since I was 14. That cost money, you know, and my parents worked really, really hard to pay. They had four kids to do that for. It's pretty different to send your kids away at that age, but again, for them, it was, they wanted to give us the opportunity to learn another language and live another life, and so they, I appreciate that a lot. I appreciate that they did have they sacrificed an awful lot. I get that, but one shouldn't be exclusive of the other. You can sacrifice a lot and still be loving and caring, and not overly critical. So I do still love my parents a lot, and I do respect them a lot. I just don't like that side of them. So I keep that closed. I try not to get myself too close, because then you get hurt.
So you're able to sort of segment.
Yeah, I can separate the two. Yeah,
which I think is such a great takeaway for that is sometimes, you know, we just want to bundle people up and give them a score. Like sort of say, okay, your average score from me to you is a 6.4. Therefore, I'm going to treat you in that certain way. Whereas, like, you know, people are so complex. You can love aspects of a person and be very frustrated with other aspects. And I think that's such a great takeaway.
Yeah. And I've definitely, as I've gotten older and more mature, I learn to accept people a lot more for how they are without trying to change them, without trying to change them the way I'd like them to be. It's people are, like I said before, you know, people are how they are, and you have to accept those sides of them as long as they're not being hurtful to you. They, everybody has, you know, the way they're made up is just through their experiences and things that have happened to them throughout their lives and that have made them that particular person. And just having a more open mind to why a person is the way that they are is really helpful. And you become more accepting of people because you don't know a person's past, and inevitably they're always that particular way because there's something that's hurt them in the past.
That's it. People are hard to hate close up, so move in. You know, that again, that's my girlfriend Brené Brown's statement, not mine, but it's like that. You know, everyone has a story, and I think that's a great way to end this, in the sense that we are so grateful for you to have shared your story, because I think so many people are going to be interested that you are real. You know, you're not only beautiful on the outside, but your beauty has really shined today, in the sense that you were able to share all those very, very emotional and very hard, you know, all the hardships today. So thank you from the bottom of my heart and Eddie's heart and Ezzy's heart. to come in today and share that. And we will definitely send all the links and so forth, because I know that so many women are going to be reaching out to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been brilliant to be in here and talk about some real issues.
Yeah, real shit.
Yeah, real shit.
Real shit. All right, well, let's sign off, because I'm just about to give you a massive friggin' hug.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you.
Wow, what an episode. Now, before I sign off, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to listen. I know that I've learned so much. And I think the one thing that this episode really reminded me of is you can never judge a book by its cover. It's the kind of thing, as Brené Brown says, strangers are hard to hate close up, so move in. So one of my action points that I would really invite you and ask you to consider is the next time that you're about to judge someone, stop and think, do I really know the full story? And the test that I always do for myself is if I can't call them, if I don't know their phone number to call them up, then I don't know them well enough to judge. So I really hope that this has made a difference, not only in your life, but for the lives around you, those people that you really want to assist. Now, selfishly, I'm going to also thank you for taking the time to listen, because there are thousands of podcasts out there. And you know what? Out of all of them, you've chosen to listen to mine. And that's a responsibility I don't take lightly. So on that note, I have a quick favor to ask. If you could spare just a few seconds to subscribe and share it with a friend, you know, it means the world to me. And it really will help us grow and also get the show to more amazing people just like you. So until next time, never forget that every day is your chance to shine.